From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell with another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. We'll open the hour with an episode of The Matinee Theater, also known as the VIX Matinee Theater, the second program in the series, originally broadcast October 29, 1944 on CBS, their dramatization of Beloved Enemy.
VIX Matinee Theater. VIX Matinee Theater, presented by the makers of VIX Vapor Rub, brings you Beloved Enemy, starring Victor Jory as Dennis Reardon. Now, here's a good thing to remember when you catch a cold. The best-known home remedy for relieving miseries of colds is VIX Vapor Rub.
Ladies and gentlemen, today, from the stage of the Matinee Theater, VIX brings you one of the most memorable love stories ever told. Beloved Enemy, adapted from Samuel Goldwyn's great motion picture. Our story opens in the city of Dublin in 1921. 1921 in Ireland, a time of unrest and discontent. A time when right or wrong, rebellion flamed through the land and good men on both sides died for their convictions. And foremost among these, a hero to his followers, but to the authorities of England only a name, Dennis Reardon.
Dennis Reardon, did you hear the news?
Yes, McCarthy, O'Brien, and Casey dead.
They were brave lads. They saved our records.
They were lads. I grew up with Tom O'Brien. I've lost a brother.
Well, the men are all assembled in the cellar for the meeting. Will you come down now?
Aye.
Did you hear that Lord Attlee and his daughter are arriving from England tonight?
That I did. The English government has sent Lord Attlee to come over and see what can be done about us. He's going to find we're quite a problem, eh, Burke? I understand, too, that there's a shipment of munitions arriving tonight.
A shipment of munitions, eh?
That's right.
They've blown up our munition ship. This is intolerable negligence on your part, Captain Loder.
But Lord Attlee, you don't understand the situation. I don't have enough men to cover all of Dublin. We're not at war with Ireland, you know. I never know where they're going to strike next.
It's your business to know.
But Reardon's spies are in the post office, the telephone exchanges, army, police. They're everywhere. Anything we decide here, Reardon knows in 2 hours. And I don't even know what the man looks like.
Well, you'd better find out what he looks like. Because if we don't get him pretty soon, there's going to be war between Ireland and England.
We're doing everything we can, Lord Attlee.
Oh, there you are, Captain Loder. There's some soldiers out here with a very handsome prisoner. If you don't want him, I'll take him.
I'll be right out, Lady Helen.
No, bring him in here. Let's see your efficiency in action, Laura.
Very well. I'll bring him in here.
I'll just sit down and watch, if you don't mind, Father.
Suit yourself, my dear, but don't interrupt.
Wait outside, men. This man was picked up close to the dock where the munition ship was destroyed, Your Lordship.
Ah, I see. What's your name?
Dennis Reardon.
You're taking a dangerous name, my man.
The best is none too good for me, my man.
Oh, impudent young rascal. They find any papers on him, Loder?
Yes, sir. Here they are.
Ah. Thomas Casey. Mm-hmm. Medical student, eh? Well, Mr. Casey, what were you doing in the vicinity of the explosion?
I was riding a bike home from the university, as peaceful as you please. When all of a sudden I heard a terrific noise and I fell off my bike. And then some soldiers came along, and would you believe it now? I was whisked into a lorry bicycle and all and brought up here and asked what I was doing back there. Is it now forbidden to ride through our own streets?
Helen!
I beg your pardon.
Let the man go, Loder.
Ed Gibbsgill.
All right, you may go.
Thank you kindly. And thank you, too, for bringing me here.
Don't be impudent.
Begging your pardon, I meant it sincerely. For I've had one look at a woman I'll never forget.
Why, thank you. You know, I've always wondered whether the romantic stories I heard about the Irish were true. And now...
And now...
Why, now I see they are.
Helen.
Good night to you, my lady. The good saints bless you and keep you.
Good night, Dennis Reardon. The same to you.
They're all alike, Lady Helen, full of blarney.
Yes. And isn't it attractive? Hobbs? Who are you? Hobbs!
Over here, my lady. In just a minute.
Well, come here. I finished shopping and I want you to drive me home.
Would you mind coming over here, my lady? This young lad's hurt pretty bad. And he won't let me touch him.
Who's hurt? What are you talking about?
Let me go. Let me go, I tell you. Let me go.
He was running and he fell. His legs all twisted up under him. He wouldn't let me touch him.
Oh, now come. Let me see your knee.
Don't you touch me. Don't you touch me.
I was a Red Cross nurse once. And even the enemy didn't mind when we helped. Let me see it. Oh, that's a good boy.
Ow!
It's just a wrench. It isn't broken. Hobbs, please help me carry him to the car. We'll have to drive him to his home. Pedro, isn't that a nice bandage?
Yes'm, thank you. My mother should be home soon. She must be shopping.
Do you think you'll be all right if I leave you?
Yes'm.
Hello there, Pedro. The door was open, so I walked. Well, lady, I'm afraid you're in the wrong section of Dublin.
Why, hello.
I fell down and hurt my leg, and she brought me home and fixed it. Isn't it all right?
Of course it's all right. But Lady Helen is in the wrong section of town.
What do you mean?
I mean that while you've been fixing the lad's legs, the neighbors have been fixing your car. Your chauffeur just left for the garage to see if he could get a repairman.
Well, how will I get home?
Did your mother take her bicycle, Peter?
No, it's around and back.
Then we'll be borrowing that.
Thank you, Miss Reardon.
Yeah, you have a frightening memory for names.
I'm not apt to forget that one.
I'll get my bike and meet you around and back. There's quite a crowd in front. They aren't used to English in this part of town.
All right, thank you.
You called him Dennis Reardon?
Yes. That's the only name I know him by.
Mother says never to call him that anymore.
Oh, I see. Well, then, we won't.
I was certainly wise in taking you around the outside of town instead of through it. With your kind of cycling, you'd have been killed for certain by an Irish lamppost. Well, let's stop and rest for a moment.
All right. Oh, it's beautiful out here, isn't it? So beautiful it almost hurts.
Yes, it is. I'm a country man at heart myself, you know. Someday I'm going to have a bit of a farm in County Galway with some fine pigs and horses on it.
All by yourself?
Indeed not. There'll be a fine-spirited woman in my house making a great clamor all day and children driving me crazy with their goings-on. And there'll be some fine rich earth for plowing and a brook and a leprechaun kitchen doorstep. And you'll always have to remember to leave him a bit of cream at night or he'll be very angry.
Oh, I'd never forget a leprechaun.
I don't think you would. Would you like to meet me at Dublin Market tomorrow? I'm buying the first pig. Would you like to help me pick him out?
No, I can't do that.
Eh, so far as the world goes, we've nothing in common, have we?
No, I'm afraid we haven't.
And there's no reason we should be friends, is there?
There's every reason we shouldn't.
Then let's not be friends. Let's just come here again and forget who we are and talk about farms in County Galway.
No, Dennis, we must not. Come on, we'd better start back.
Just in case you change your mind, I'll be waiting at 4 o'clock at the pig stalls. Tim, my boy, is this not a fine-looking pig?
Aye, but Dennis, our English friend Captain Loder is close by, looking at cabbages and taking quite an interest in you and your pigs.
Yeah, I see, I see. I think I'll be asking you to put this pig by for me, Mr. O'Hoolahan.
All right, sir, that I will.
There's some more of the English over there by the chickens.
Quick, before they surround us. Have you any coins?
Aye.
Then throw them in the air quickly and get away while the kids are scrambling for them. Come on.
Here you are, ladies. Scramble.
Scramble. Glad you came. When I wrote you the note and gave you my new address, I didn't know whether you'd come to my house or not, seeing as how you weren't at the market yesterday.
This is the last time I will ever meet you. You see, I'm not your friend. I'm your enemy. I know you're Dennis Reardon. Pater told me without realizing it. That's how they knew you'd be at the market yesterday. Through me.
Did you also tell them you were meeting me here today?
No. It's no use asking you not to hate me. I'd better go.
No, don't go. Sit down and talk a bit. It may be a long time before we're meeting again.
We can never see each other again. You know that now, don't you?
Yes, I know it now. But all the years after you've gone from me, I'll be thinking of what might have been. And maybe it would be good to know if we thought of it in the same way.
Maybe it would.
Every evening, I'd have asked you to meet me on top of the hilltop. What would you have said to that when I asked you?
I'd have said, thank you, Dennis Reardon. I'll be there.
And all through the summer evenings, we'd have walked on the hills side by side. Not talking much, wouldn't we have?
We wouldn't have needed to talk much except to say, look at those stars. And did you ever see such a moon?
And one evening, I'd have put my arm around you and us walking alone in the moonlight. And what would you have said then?
I don't think I'd have said anything. I think I would just have sighed.
A happy sigh?
Oh, very.
Then we'd have walked slower and slower and stopped. And I'd have said, ah, it's the honest and beautiful woman you are.
Oh, Dennis, don't. Don't say any more.
And I'd have said, I love you. I love you. And after we were married, we'd be on my farm in County Galway, riding fine horses together and us laughing crazy all day long.
Oh, Dennis, hold me close. Don't ever let me go. Dennis, my dearest.
My darling. My darling. Look, darling, it's dark out. I think I must take you home now.
Oh, Dennis. I love you so.
No, don't cry, my darling.
It's hard not to cry. I've never been in love before. And to have had love for such a little time, and then to let it go, it seems past all bearing.
Someday, when I finish what I must do, I'll come looking for you. And if you have not changed your mind, perhaps you'll go with me to County Galway.
I won't change my mind. Oh, wait, Dennis. No matter how long it is.
And I'll come to you no matter when it is. And I'll begrudge every minute of every hour on every clock in the world until my job is done and we can be together.
Goodbye, my dearest.
Goodbye, my darling.
In just a moment, we'll bring you Act Two of Beloved Enemy from the stage of Vic's Matinee Theater. When your child suffers the miseries of a cold, everybody seems to have advice on what to do about it. But if you took a public opinion poll, you'd find that the modern way most mothers use to relieve distress of their children's colds is to rub on Vic's Vapor Rub. Now, for such an outstanding preference, there must be a basic proven reason. The moment you rub on Vapor Rub, it starts to work to bring fine relief right in the very places where distress is. Vapor Rub penetrates into the cold congested upper bronchial tubes with its special soothing medicinal vapors. And at the same time, it stimulates chest and back surfaces like a comforting, warming poultice. For hours, this penetrating, stimulating action of Vapor Rub keeps on working to bring gratifying relief. It invites restful sleep, and often by morning, most of the misery of the cold is gone. Try it yourself. Just rub on Vapor Rub tonight. And remember, only Vapor Rub gives you this special penetrating, stimulating action.
It's the best known home remedy for relieving miseries of colds. Vicks VapoRub.
Now the second act of Beloved Enemies, starring Victor Jory. As our curtain rises, we're in England. And in the London house of Lord Athley, we find Lady Helen talking to her father.
Father, have you made up your mind what you're going to say to Parliament?
Yes. I'm going to recommend that Reardon and the delegates selected from his party be invited to England to see if we can't negotiate.
Oh, Father, that's wonderful.
If he does come, Helen, I shall hold you to your promise. You're not to see him alone. I say, if he comes.
Very well, Father. But he'll come. You'll see. He'll come. Welcome to England, Mr. Reardon. This is my father, Lord Athley. Father, Mr. Reardon.
Lord Athley.
How do you do, sir? I believe the last time we met, your name was...
Was Reardon, sir.
Yes, yes. I trust you will enjoy this reception we've planned in your honor. My daughter will see that you meet everyone.
It was very kind of you, sir.
Met Lord and Lady Huntington, Sir Cecil Brownlee. I do hope I've presented you to everyone.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, Dennis.
Oh, my dear, you're so beautiful. If only I could take in my arms.
Oh, darling, if only you could.
But we cannot see each other alone. I gave my oath.
I had to do something like that, too.
I hate receptions.
I know. So do I. Oh, don't look at me like that. Everyone will know. Don't you admire that portrait, Mr. Reardon? It's a Reynolds, you know.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Perhaps I should go.
Oh, no, please.
It's torture seeing you like this.
It's better than not seeing you at all. Come, let me show you about the house. There's the library in there.
Hmm. What things in your life happen in that room?
That's where I played the harp when I was 14, in a pink dress.
That room?
My mother's sitting room. I used to say my prayers in there before she died. Then for 10 years, I never went into it once. I do now.
And do you pray there now?
Yes, for you. And for peace, Dennis. Maybe this conference will mean peace. It could, couldn't it, Dennis?
It could, Helen. But it isn't very likely.
Helen, some of our guests are ready to leave.
Oh, I'll come at once, Father. I wish you luck at the conferences tomorrow, Dennis. You and Ireland.
The delegates from Ireland must realize that we've made concessions far beyond our original intentions. In the past few days, we have conceded point after point in our efforts to reach a satisfactory conclusion. You're reaching for the moon, gentlemen, and we cannot give it to you.
It's all or nothing, Dennis. Don't let them bluff you into compromising.
They've given in on so many of our big points, Burke.
They have not given in on all.
Gentlemen! It is not enough.
Then further discussion is useless. War is inevitable.
We are tired and our vision is blurred. The fate of millions of people lies in our hands. I urge the leniency of our friends, the Irish, and beg the continuance of this conference tomorrow.
Hear, hear.
Is that satisfactory, Mr. Reardon?
I hold but little hope that anything further can be accomplished. The issue between us is clear cut. But before we all take an irrevocable step, we will consent to one more meeting.
Very well. We're adjourned until tomorrow.
Burke,
We knew when we came here the best we could get would be a compromise.
Let them compromise.
All the compromising can't be on one side. They've already offered us more than Ireland has ever honestly hoped to get.
That's right, it is. I think we should take what they offer, and maybe a little later we can win a few more points.
We were sworn to demand everything or nothing. Oh, what's the good of arguing? You hold the deciding vote, Dennis.
That's right. In your vote hangs the balance of war or peace for Ireland, Dennis. Have you made up your mind?
I'm going out for a walk. I've got to think. They made us some fine promises today. There's no denying it.
They won't put them on paper. They just shall have home rule, and we must take their word for it. Well, I'm not willing to take anyone's word for anything. And if you do, Dennis Reardon, you'll answer to the people for it. They want their rights, and they've sent you here to get them for them. Now, what are you going to do about it?
I'm going for a walk. I have to think.
Mind your promise about that woman, Dennis.
I've not broken it, Burke.
Dennis, I'm so glad I found you. I asked for you at the hotel, and the clerk said he thought you were here in the park.
I've sworn not to see you alone.
Do you think Ireland would be completely destroyed if you kissed me? Just once.
Oh, Helen. Oh, darling, but you're enough to make a man forget life and country and promises.
Dennis. It's your vote that's going to mean war or peace, isn't it?
Yes. And I'm racking my brain and my heart for the answer. I can't forget the lads who died and all they fought for.
Is it wrong to remember those who want to live?
It is, if we fail the dead in order to bring easy comfort to the living. My country and its cause must come first before any man's right to live. Until we have freedom, we have nothing.
They're giving you that.
No, they're only promising us that. And not on paper.
Then take the promise and fight if it isn't kept. Give us a chance to keep it. Don't ever let your country go to war, Dennis Reardon, over something that can be settled peacefully. We are not without honor. We have made you a promise. Give us a chance to keep that promise. Dennis, the right of thousands of people to live and be happy are in your hands. You have no right not to try the compromise if you've their good at heart.
Good night, Helen. I must leave you now.
Dennis, what are you going to do?
I have to walk and think some more.
On behalf of the Irish Republic, I accept the promises of the English Committee. We agree to your compromise.
It's done, Helen. They've signed it.
Where's Dennis?
He left on the afternoon boat for Ireland. Helen, that man is one of the bravest I've ever known. Heaven help him. When he signed that treaty, it was as good as signing his own death warrant, and he knew it.
Death warrant?
Yes. The fanatics of his own party won't stand for compromise. They'll all look upon him as a traitor.
I'm going to him, Father.
Helen, to go to him would be very dangerous.
I must go to him, Father.
All right. I understand. We'll go together, daughter.
For 800 years, Irish patriots have fought for this freedom.
There he is, Father. He's speaking, see, on that platform. Let's get closer where we can hear him.
A government of its own. And now, for the first time in Irish history, we have that government. There are among us some men who still believe that Ireland is not ready for peace. I hope I may live long enough to prove to them that what has been gained today is everything we should hope for at this time, and that what will be gained in the future depends no longer on gunpowder and hatred, but on the peaceful understanding of the people. Our future, under the treaty, is a brighter one than any Irishman has ever known. But it must be built wisely and sanely. And above all, it must be built on peace.
There's the man that sold us out for a woman. There's the traitor.
Oh, they killed him. Father, they killed him. Come, we must get to him.
Come on, let's get his name.
doctor?
He'll be all right. It's just a flesh wound. Go along in there now. He's waiting for you.
Well, now, woman, what are you doing here in Ireland without an invitation?
Without an invitation, is it? And who was it that invited me to live on a farm in County Galway?
Careful now. The doctor says I'm not to be excited. Don't you be shouting at me.
If I have any trouble with you, Dennis Reardon, I'll take it to the people. I saw how it was with you and the people tonight, after Burke shot you. He's in jail right now, thinking over his mistakes. The people are going to try it your way, Dennis.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Ah, well, then, I guess my job is finished. And I can take it easy for the rest of my life on that bit of a farm with you.
Take it easy? Land alive, listen to the man. With a plowing and a planting and farming and milking and butchering and carpentering to be done, he's talking about resting.
May the saints bless us and keep us. The English are no better than the Irish. You're talking the same way my mother used to talk to my father.
And when you finish that milking, Patrick Reardon, you can set your mind and your hand to fixing the back step.
It all goes to the farm in County Galway, darling. How does it sound to you?
How does it sound? Come here where I can put my arm around you, Helen, my darling, and I'll spend the rest of the evening telling you.
Would you mind kissing me first?
Would I mind kissing you? Oh, what a question to be asking an Irishman.
In just a moment, Mr. Jory will tell you about next week's production. Meanwhile, a very timely message. If you have a cold today, are you going to wake up tomorrow morning feeling just too miserable to get through the day's work? Or are you going to rub on Vicks VapoRub tonight? You see, the moment you rub VapoRub on your throat, chest, and back, it starts right to work bringing grand relief. It helps relieve congestion and irritation in the upper breathing passages, the coughing spasms, sore throat, and that muscular soreness or tightness. And here's why the results are so comforting and gratifying. VapoRub penetrates into the cold, congested upper bronchial tubes with its special soothing medicinal vapors. And at the same time, it stimulates chest and back surfaces like a comforting, warming poultice. What's more, this penetrating, stimulating action of VapoRub keeps on working for hours while you sleep to bring you wonderful comfort. Now make sure you get VapoRub, because only VapoRub gives you this special penetrating, stimulating action, the best-known home remedy for relieving miseries of colds. Vicks VapoRub.
This is Victor Jory. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your many kind letters and your suggestions. I'm answering your letters as rapidly as possible. Your suggestions for future plays are most welcome. And if you care to write, you may address me in care of Columbia Broadcasting, 22, New York. Next week, from the stage of Matinee Theater, we will present that delightful RKO picture, My Favorite Wife. Leo McCarey's hilarious story of a man who found, on the night of his second wedding, that the first wife he had thought dead was very much alive. Next week, My Favorite Wife.
Our play was directed by Richard Sandville and was adapted by Gene Holloway from Samuel Goldwyn's motion picture. Mr. Goldwyn will soon present his latest Technicolor comedy, The Princess and the Pirate, starring Bob Hope at your local theater. Music for our series is under the direction of Mark Warnow. The part of Helen was played by Gertrude Warner. Be sure and listen again next week when Vic's Matinee Theater presents My Favorite Wife, starring Victor Jory. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch, it's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. and the blog and website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is program number 1536. Some comedy to wrap up the hour, and we'll fast forward to October 20th, 1953, for another CBS broadcast, an episode of People Are Funny, hosted by Art Linkletter. Where is your husband tonight?
Lady, are you sure you know where your husband is tonight?
We have a lady who doesn't, and you'll meet her later on...
People Are Funny!
From Hollywood, John Goodell's production of People Are Funny, brought to you by Forever Yours and Milky Way Candy Bars, two quality bars made famous by Mars. And now here's radio's top master of ceremonies, Art Linkletter.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hollywood and the People Are Funny show. I think we're going to have a very busy and, I hope, exciting half hour ahead of you. You're going to hear about the dog who will inherit $1,000 cash. And you kids and parents all over the country, you'll learn how to get Halloween masks for nothing. But right now, Roy Rowan, who's first to help us prove that people are funny in Hollywood?
Miss Carol Nerby from Pasadena, California. Meet Art Linkletter.
Hello, Miss Nerby.
How do you do?
As you know, Halloween Tricks and Treats will be with us soon, October 31st. Your trick on this program will be along in a minute. But right now, here's a treat. A big 24-bar box of that dark chocolate favorite, Forever Yours.
Thank you.
Now, you're a single girl.
Yes.
And your first name is?
Carol.
What do you do, Carol?
I'm an X-ray technician, registered.
And you're very pretty blonde, and you've never been married.
No.
Uh-huh. There's no reason why you shouldn't if we found the right fella.
I don't think so.
Uh-huh. You're romantically inclined.
Why, certainly.
As a matter of fact, Miss Nerby, I must confess to something. Our first stunt tonight, we really need a married woman, and you're single. And would you pretend, just for the fun of it, pretend that you're married for the evening?
I will.
You will, all right. You go along with this. Okay, I now pronounce you a married woman. And what do you know, folks? Already, here is her first child. Would you bring it out, please? Just take him. He's a 6.5-month baby. Boy, is he a cutie pie? Say, don't things go fast on this show? She was a single girl a minute ago. Now she's married and has a baby. Take a look at him. Do you think he looks more like you or your husband?
Well, he doesn't have my brown eyes.
Yeah, and you don't know what your husband looks like, do you?
No, not now.
Well, it doesn't make any difference because, Mrs. Nerby, you don't have any husband now because he has just deserted you. You see, things do happen fast. A minute ago, she wasn't married. Now she's married, has a baby, and her husband's gone. And I'll tell you where he is. He's down at a Hollywood bus station getting ready to take a bus and desert you and your child. Are you properly confused?
I am.
Do you don't know what I'm driving at? Huh? I see a look of horror creeping into her eyes. Well, this is the truth, Miss Nerby. Here's the idea of the stunt. We're going to drive you, Mr. Irvin Atkins there, you and your new baby, down to a bus station, and he'll point out a man to you.
He will?
Now, you rush up to this stranger, and you accuse him of deserting you and your baby. I want you to make this dramatic and believable. Pretend I'm the husband. What would you say?
You scoundrel! How dare you run away and leave us alone?
That's pretty good, isn't it? She catches on real fast. Well, I tell you, you remember the landlady needs the rent. There's no milk for the baby in the house. Anything you can think of, don't worry about the stranger, because he's an actor that we've hired that Irv will point out. What we want to find out is the reactions of the people in the bus station. There are always maybe 30 or 40 people waiting. Will they take sides in a family squabble? People are funny about sticking their nose into other people's business. Got that?
Yes.
And kind of take note of what that... Will they side with you or him and so forth? And it'll be kind of an interesting report when you get back, okay?
All right.
All right, on your way, Irv. Say goodbye to the poor, deserted wife. You know how we're going to double-cross her? Oh, then you already know. I won't tell you. Wait till the end of the program and find out if you're right. Say, Roy, would you believe it? The other day I was actually talking to some men from Mars.
Oh, sure, Art. Everybody does.
They land in flying saucers, and they're little people with three heads and purple eyes.
Roy, one more word from you, and you'll be working on another show. These men from Mars do not have three heads and purple eyes. They're from the Mars Candy Company, right here on Earth. Of course, the candy they make is out of this world because they are the makers of the Forever Yours candy bars. When they make Forever Yours, they only have one thing in mind, and that's the pleasure you get from them. And that's why the Mars people don't care how much it costs, so long as they can turn out the best candy bar ever made. Now, you take that dark milk chocolate that covers a Forever Yours. It's the best dark chocolate that money can buy, and you get lots of it. Then there's the delicious Nougat Center, flavored with pure vanilla, and there's none finer. And when it comes to the caramel layer that tops the nougat, it's the tastiest you ever bit into. Now, you see, to make really good caramel, you have to put plenty of cream in it. And that's what Mars does. Puts plenty. Plenty of the best cream and fresh country eggs and sugar, everything else that goes into caramel. Forever Yours just can't help being a great candy bar. If you'd try one, folks, you'd see. Why don't you try one tomorrow and see for yourself?
And always make yours Forever Yours.
Who's next, Roy?
Mr. Stanley Mitchell from Los Angeles. Meet Art Linkletter.
Howdy, Mr. Mitchell. You're Mr. Mitchell, a single man.
Yes, sir.
Well, to sweeten you up a little more as a bachelor, here's a big box of 24 delicious Forever Yours candy bars.
Thank you.
Now, Stanley, what do you do for a living?
Take care of the mail.
Where?
Terminal Annex.
Here in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're 40?
Right.
And never been married?
Yes, I have.
How many true friends do you think you could count on? It's something very few people have given a lot of thought to, but how many would you say?
Well, quite a few.
You have a lot of friends?
Quite a few.
Uh-huh. What's your definition of a true friend?
Oh, I would say one who would go to bat for you when you're in a tough spot.
Mm-hmm. Another definition would be a fellow who might loan you money when you need it without asking you why you have to have it or when he'll get it back. Wouldn't that be a definition of a true friend?
You forced me to say yes.
I would say so. A true friend would do that. You go up to him and say, Joe, I need $10 or whatever it is, and he gives it to you.
You're right.
All right. Now, do you think that you have a friend whom you could telephone this evening who would let you borrow $100 on a quick, unexplained notice?
I think so.
You think you have? Well, we're going to find out. People are funny about judging how many friends they have. There's a telephone over there on that table. It's an outside phone with a connection. We'll be able to hear both ends of the conversation. And if you can get one of your friends to promise to lend you $100 tonight, we're going to give you an all-expense-paid vacation at the Sahara Hotel in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Now, you got a number in mind. You got some friend you know his number. Just lift up the receiver. He's really scratching his forehead there. And you just start dialing, and there are two rules. You can't tell him you're on People Are Funny. You can't tell him why you need it. You must do it in a minute and a half after you get him. After your friend.
I can't tell him why I need it?
No, you just say you need it badly. See?
All right.
All right. Now, just start dialing. Lift it up and start dialing.
Hello?
Johnny?
Yes.
This is Stan.
Oh, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Say, I'm kind of a bad spot, but I need some money pretty bad. Can you let me have it for a day or so?
Listen, can you meet me down at Fedco tonight?
Well, I mean, it's quite a bit, but I'd just like to know. I need it pretty bad.
Yeah, well, how much?
$100.
You make it?
Well, where can I meet you?
Well,
can I come by someplace tonight after, I'll be back about 9:30.
9:30? Could you let me know now? I gotta know right away.
Yeah, that's all right.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, I'll Okay,
that's all. Who was that fella?
That was John Goodman, clerk, friend of mine.
A clerk down at the postal department?
No, he works out at Hollywood Station.
The Hollywood Station. How do you like that? He even works in a different station. And he you did it in how much time, John?
57 seconds.
57 seconds, and... I tell you, kind of had your heart in your throat for a second. Yeah. But when it came right down to the line, that boy delivered, and as a result of tonight's program, he'll probably get lots of calls from his friends. They know a good one now when they hear one. Well, Mr. Mitchell, you have a friend who trusts you, and you must be the kind of a fellow who merits it. And you win from Forever Yours an all-expense vacation at the luxurious Sahara Hotel in Las Vegas, and you'll be flown there on a 300-mile-an-hour TWA Transworld Airline Constellation. You had some fun, huh?
That's wonderful.
And besides that, because you have such a nice friend, we're going to send him from us an electric shaver and a Shavex, the amazing attachment that doubles the power of any electric shaver. Thanks from People Are Funny for proving that people are swell. Bye, Sammy.
And don't forget, always make yours forever yours.
Who's next, Roy Rowan?
Mrs. Lillian Peterson from Los Angeles. Meet Art Linkletter.
All right, Mrs. Peterson, you come on up here. What do you do as a job?
I work downtown at Bullock's.
Uh-huh. Now, Miss Peterson, to sweeten up those spooks that are going to come around next Halloween, we have a big box of Forever Yours bars from the Mars Candy Company for you. And you'll recall that you said you believe in female intuition?
Yes.
We think that people are funny about liking to tell of their narrow escapes. If anybody's ever escaped with their life in an interesting or unusual way, they're bound and determined to have everybody hear about it. And so you and I go down the audience, Mrs. Peterson. We're going down, walk up and down the aisles. We're going to talk to three or four people. And they're going to tell us their true stories of a narrow escape. But I must warn you that there is one person in the audience who is a phony, planted there by us, a liar. And he is not going to tell the truth. And Forever Yours will give you $200 worth of fine merchandise from the famous Spiegel catalog if you can tell us which one is lying after you've heard them all.
I'll try.
All right, let's see the hands of the people who'd like to tell us about their narrow escapes. Would you stand up, the lady right here in the coral suit? You are Mrs.?
Healy.
And Mrs. Healy, supposing you just tell us in your own words where it happened and what happened.
Well, several years ago in Chicago, there were some new neighbors moved in who had built a very beautiful home in this residential district. And they moved in a few weeks before Halloween, and they had a housewarming Halloween night. And about 2 a.m, I was awakened with dreadful yelling and screaming, and the neighborhood being quiet, it alarmed me. I got up and put on my house slippers and went to the front window, and there was the street just milling with men beating and banging each other. In the meantime, a neighbor evidently called the police, and the patrol came and took them off. And a little while, a flashlight flashed over my windows were in between times. Something I didn't know what it was went over my head, and I put my hand up. My hair was full of glass, and these two men rang my doorbell, and they came to the door, and they said they were detectives, and they had noticed the hole in the glass, and they came in and asked, wanted to see if anybody was injured, and I told them that I was so surprised and scared I didn't know what to say, and one fellow looked down at me, and he said, "Boy, you'd been a cooked goose if you had shoes on. You have slippers on, and you were just below the bullet."
Now, you heard that story now, Mrs. Peterson. How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Your name is?
Hal Keene.
Where are you from, Mr. Keene?
St. Louis, Missouri.
And what was the story of your narrow escape?
Well, a couple of years ago, I was wrestling professionally in a small town, or not too small town, Owensboro, Kentucky. And after my match, which I won, the people seemed to think that I was unfair in my tactics. And when the referee announced that I had won, it seemed like the whole arena arose and was just about to lynch me. And my opponent, still quite angry for something, I can't still to this day figure out what it was, runs over and he just hits me with all his might.
When you weren't looking?
Yes. And that's all I remember, that I was knocked out cold. But later on in the dressing room, I found out that if it hadn't been for the fact that had knocked me out and they carried me out of me on the stretcher, God only knows what might have happened to me with all those people who seemed to claim that I was wrong.
In other words, they were getting ready to form a lynch mob for you.
Yes, that's right.
Sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know too much about wrestling.
Our next guest is Mr.
Falk.
Where are you from, Mr. Falk?
Well, originally Chicago.
All right. What was your narrow escape?
Well, last year, my 25th anniversary, I almost forgot it. It was on November 11th. So in the last minute, I thought, well, I better get some silverware because it's my silver anniversary. So I went to the bank to get the money. And just as they handed me the money, I heard some the alarms and some bullets going. So I run for the door, and a bullet crashed the door above my head.
It was a bank holdup.
Mm-hmm.
You got out all right?
Yeah.
And didn't get hit?
No.
All right, there's two bullet stories. This was a bank holdup. The other one was a neighborhood brawl. Thank you very much, sir. We have one more guest, a lady. That makes two ladies and two men. And now remember, one of these is a liar. One of these is a liar because we put him here, or her, and she or he was to tell one fact in this story which would tip you off. You are Mrs.?
Mrs. Howard Rusted.
From where?
From Los Angeles now.
Mrs. Rusted, what happened to you?
Well, when I was about three, we moved to not too far from a railroad track. And one night, my sister got scared. She was dreaming, and she tried to throw me out the upstairs window. And if the screen hadn't been there, I would have toppled out. But I yelled, so when I hit the floor, she woke up.
How old were you? Three?
About three.
How old was she?
Well, I wouldn't say. She was much older than I. She was
about
14 years old.
And it was a nightmare, and she was in her sleep, taking you to the window to throw you out.
Yes.
Well, that's an exciting story. And it was a long time ago, wasn't it?
A long time ago.
Uh-huh. Well, now, Mrs. Peterson, you've been looking at all of these guests, and you can just glance around. Here they all stand. You can judge of their honesty, of their expression, their delivery. There is one thing which is not true about the story. And remember, if you tell me in the first guess who is the phony in this little stunt to prove that people are phony, you'll get the $200 worth of choice merchandise from the famous Spiegel catalog, and Spiegel has satisfied thousands of customers for 88 years. Mrs. Peterson, who are you picking?
There's a man who has a suspicious look on his face. If I judge from that way, yes.
In other words, the wrestler looks suspicious to you.
Yes.
Now, there's nothing about his story particularly, because you don't know anything about wrestling.
I know nothing whatsoever.
But your intuition tells you that there's something sneaky about him.
Yes, definitely. The way his eyes and the general contour of his face and so on.
Yeah. You know, this is very interesting because this happens in police lineups and things all the time where people identify suspicious-looking people, and often they are accused of crimes. And believe me, you have very good intuition most of the time, but not this time. He's a perfectly okay guy.
Is that right?
So I'm sorry you're wrong. Now, I'm going to have to drop the prize to $100 and give you a second guess. Now, you know that he told the truth. Now, if you had been listening carefully and looking carefully, I think you could have told. You want to take a second guess?
Well, I assure you it will be a guess at random this time, definitely.
Yes?
I have no idea now.
You haven't? Uh-huh. Well, what are you going to guess?
Well, I'll just guess this man, then.
This man here?
Mm-hmm.
For any special reason?
No, just because I'm going to guess now.
In other words, you seem to think that the men are more apt to be liars than the women.
Well...
You've been married.
I am.
Oh, yes. Well, that explains everything. You still are married.
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Well, I tell you, your feeling that the men are more liable to tell lies than the women...
No, they aren't. Women are bigger prevaricators than men.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yes, definitely. Women are.
Yes, but not tonight.
No, not tonight.
Well, you have hit it right. Your guess was right. The second time, this man, who doesn't look sneaky at all, did tell the lie, and I will tell you what it was that should have tipped you off. It was the 25th wedding anniversary that he went to the bank, and it was November 11th. Now, what is November 11th?
Armistice.
Armistice Day, and what happens to the banks on Armistice
They're
Day?
They're closed.
That's right. Oh, that's right. And we want to thank you other guests who told us the true stories of your narrow escapes. We'd like to have each of you have a sparkling chrome Miramatic coffee maker. And thanks from Forever Yours for proving you can't be too careful when you judge people. Thank you.
And don't forget, always make yours forever yours.
2 weeks ago, a little pup from the Los Angeles City Pound had his life saved because he was adopted by a member of our studio audience a few hours before he was doomed to extinction. Now, strangely enough, on this program of all places, it turned out that this little dog had $1,000 in cash in the bank. And he had a little note around his neck, said he wanted to give it to some other homeless dog in a pound somewhere in the United States. Now, last week, We picked a man at random out of our studio audience to find the missing dog. We discovered he was a Reserve Air Force officer whose hometown was Salt Lake City, Utah. We sent him back to his hometown on a TWA 300-mile-an-hour Transworld Airline Constellation, where he was to interview people who had adopted dogs during the preceding week and to award $1,000 in cash to the dog of his choice. Now, he was supposed to be back here in Hollywood tonight. He didn't make it. We've had him on the telephone line, I think, for the last couple of minutes. John, is that right? Bring out the phone, and this is a regular phone. You take the microphone, John, and I'll chat with him.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Richard Kaiser.
Yes, this is Dick.
I thought we had lost you.
No, I'm still here.
You're in Salt Lake.
Yes.
And you were supposed to be back here this week, and I know, of course, that you were delayed in getting away due to your own personal problems, but what happened?
Well, this is more of a job than I figured. They're kind of hard to judge a dog, especially when there's that much money involved.
Well, what do you do now? You've got a list of the dogs adopted from the pound.
That's right.
And now you're visiting these homes.
Yes, I am. I have a list of things I look for in the dogs.
Like what?
Well, general appearance, their alertness, does he learn tricks easily, does he understand what is wanted, and friendliness, does he come rushing up wagging his tail, and is he a good protector, does he watch the property, or does he watch the young children that are out playing, and then I sort of play with the dog a little and look him over, give him a general checking.
By the way, I did want to ask you, this is your old hometown, and you're single, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Are you looking up any old girlfriends?
Oh, yes, I certainly am. I wish I was out judging the young ladies.
Stick to the dogs.
Well, I will.
You can see the girls on your own time. And, Dick, we'll see you back here in Hollywood next Tuesday with a full report and with the dog and with the person who adopted the dog from the pound, and we'll award the $1,000 then.
Okay, fine.
Goodbye, Dick.
Goodbye.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. A young fellow's up there in Salt Lake having the time of his life at our expense, and somebody's going to get $1,000 because they were nice enough and kind enough to get a little dog from a pound. We'll find out next week who it is when Mr. Kaiser brings the dog and the master back to Hollywood. A week from Saturday is Halloween, the night for all the spooks and the goblins to be out, and believe me, when they come to my house, they're going to be happy. Happy because I'm stocking up on Forever Yours and Milky Way candy bars right there at home. And the kids will really go for them. I know that from past seasons. It's the best candy that money can buy. And there's another reason I'm passing out Forever Yours and Milky Way candy bars this Halloween. The colorful free masks on the back of the Forever Yours 24-bar package. And on the backs of Milky Way's 24s and Milky Way 6-packs. Now, our announcer, Roy, is holding them up. Look at some of them. Here's one of a pirate. And here's one of a silly clown. And look at this horrible...
Art, that's me.
I beg your pardon, Roy. I didn't think they were turning out masks so frightening this year. Anyhow, there are 18 different masks in full color on the Mars candy boxes, and the kids will love them when they go out for tricks and treats. Now, ladies and gentlemen, take a tip from me and give Forever Yours and Milky Way candy bars on Halloween night. You'll be the ghost of the town with all the little spooks who come calling on you. Forever Yours and Milky Ways, the best treats that ever turned a trick on Halloween. Now, we had a stunt that started a few minutes ago that was one of the most exciting stunts as far as possibilities are concerned that we've done for a long time. We sent a single girl out pretending that she was married with a 6.5-month-old baby boy in her arms to go to a Hollywood bus station and accuse a strange man of trying to desert her and their baby. She's back. Let's find out what happened and what was the double cross. Here she comes, Miss Nervy, a very sweet gal from Canada originally. How do you like being a married lady?
Oh, just wonderful.
Yeah, I'll bet. You had to go up to a bus station tonight, and Mr. Atkins pointed out a fella, didn't he?
He certainly did.
What did you do, or what did he do, when you went up and yelled about the desertion?
He denied it. He said, no, he wasn't married to me. He said, you must have the wrong lady.
The wrong what?
The husband. He said, lady, he said, you must have the wrong husband. I said, no, indeed, I haven't the wrong husband. Where are you going?
And did he try to get away from you?
Certainly he did. He sat there and tried to argue for a few minutes. And then I said, well, where do you think you're going? He said, I'm going to San Diego.
San Diego? What kind of a looking fellow was he?
Well, my husband is 6'2". He weighs 160 pounds.
Oh, you said that? This is what he looked like.
Yes.
And what did the rest of the people around the place do?
Well, at first when I went in there, the people were hypnotized.
You mean by this suddenly being an eyewitness to such a personal drama?
That's right.
Did you get the proper inflection in your voice?
Oh, yes. And then they were standing there, and before we left, the people were just standing there looking, their eyes popping out of their heads. And
did anybody do anything or say anything?
Then we went over to the ticket office, and the man said, when he told me that the bus was leaving at 6:55, I said, well, he can't go on that one. That's only 10 minutes. I said, we got to talk this over.
Yeah?
So then he says, no. He says, I can't do that. So then he started edging away, and I kept going with him.
Well, the baby in your arms, where was he edging toward?
He was going to the men's room.
Did he get away from you, Eileen?
When he went in there, I stood there for a few minutes, and then I came away.
Did anybody take your side or anyone?
When I came out, these three women rushed up, and one says, well, she ought to know her own husband. What's the matter with the man?
Yeah?
Where does he think he's going? Call the police.
These women, they were sticking their nose into your...
Oh, yes.
But no man at the station volunteered to say anything.
Oh, there was one sailor there, and he was really giving the man the eye.
But he didn't say anything.
No, he just was standing there looking.
Well, now, this is interesting to us because this is a bona fide experiment, and the women were the only ones who volunteered to call the police or do something drastic about it.
Well, there were two or three men there, but they were just sort of looking. They were maybe skeptical. I don't know.
Well, did you, Mr. Atkins, did you notice anything?
All I can say is when he steps out of that men's room, three old ladies are going to lynch him, Art.
Three old ladies. Well, now... Didn't you feel a little sorry for the poor guy who was acting the part of your erring husband?
Oh, yes.
As a matter of fact, you should feel sorry because you know this program, don't you?
Oh, yes.
He was no more actor than you are. He was a perfectly innocent guy that Irv pointed out.
Oh, no!
This guy was a stranger. We just picked him out, and he's probably going to come out of the men's room along about Christmas. Isn't that awful?
Terrible.
Well, now you know exactly what will happen in a bus station if this ever occurs to you.
But I certainly will.
I'm sure the man you get will be too smart to ever leave you. Well, mistakes will happen, and because Irv did this dirty trick on you, I didn't want him to, but he did. It was his idea. We want you to have a beautiful Tappan gas range with exclusive Tappan features because good foods just happen when you're cooking on a Tappan. Can you cook?
I certainly can.
And you now got a Tappan. I'll bet you'll be married in a week. Goodbye, and thanks from People Are Funny. Well, I guess that's about it for tonight. If you live in Southern California or if you're going to come out here for a visit and you'd like to see People Are Funny, you can write to CBS Hollywood for tickets. Now, before I go, on behalf of the Mars Candy Company, I'd like to extend greetings to a fine organization that's constantly at work to prevent accidents. It's the National Safety Council, which this week is observing its 41st National Safety Congress in Chicago. Congratulations and success in this important job. Now, this is Art Linkletter saying goodbye from Hollywood and reminding you it'll be a trick to treat this Halloween with Forever Yours and Milky Ways. Get them both in the economical six-packs and the 24-bar boxes with the free, colorful cutout masks on the back. Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
That wraps up this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.